And coming up next, it's the December 25th version of Bathrob Spears Broadsides as 2014 grinds to a close. Stay tuned.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, for you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you. Sing me of wars and sing me of bread lines. Tell me of front page news. Sing me of strikes and last minute headlines. Press your observation in syncopation. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must get hot with what is what, or I won't love you. I want a song that's satirical, putting the mirror into miracle.
Good evening, everybody. I'm Robert North, and of course, this is Bathrob Spears Broadsides. Of course, for all you listeners, and hi to all you new folks. I should say old listeners versus new listeners. So I trekked my way down here tonight, and I'm not entirely sure why, but I'm going to try to kind of catch up on stuff that I've got left over from the year that still relevant, in fact, even more relevant, as of December 25th, at least the one item I'm thinking of, which is the, what I call them as performance pens, or dots for dodos, and there's got to be a better name for it, but that's my temporary moniker, for the 1-2% of the sidewalk that is now reserved for performers, speakers, vendors, I guess, tablers, panhandlers, while the other 98% is for commercial activity and walking past. That seems fair, doesn't it? Our public sidewalks being apportioned in that way. At least that's, I think, how the city council chose to do it and must see it, or maybe it's got its eyes closed as it simply passes the agenda of its staff, which I think closely approximates the wishes of the merchant community. In any case, on December 25th, a week, I should say a month, after the November 25th second reading of the Lane Comstock reform of the performer ordinance of a year before, it actually simply was the sidewalks theft ordinance, or sidewalk shrinkage ordinance, stealing the sidewalk for fun and profit, that was done in the fall of 2013, because the laws that were passed then simply were unworkable, in the sense that neither the police enforced them, nor did people who were on the sidewalk abide by them. But the police were able to get nasty because they were given increased powers. And whenever there are more intense and numerous laws made, it gives the police far more opportunities to open up their ticket books or their mouths and say, move along, follow my orders. And they have lethal force to back them up. And the ultimate case, as we've seen across the country, very much more dramatically than in the past few years, but certainly it's been the case all along. In any case, these ordinances that were passed, they've been getting worse ever since 1994, when they were originally passed in the sellout deal that the city council made with the Downtown Association to, in essence, sort of the after the earthquake, we'll surrender our progressive ideals locally, if there ever had any, regarding poor and homeless people and public spaces. And let's all work together to bring in tourist dollars. Of course, that's not unusual. It happens in almost universally across the country. And it's also fought quite rigorously and vigorously by the people that it crushes underfoot or disperses to the shadows or the suburbs. And it's also being fought here. I've been fighting it for decades. In any case, however, on December 25th, there will be... There is today, legally speaking, the new ordinance goes into effect. Now, what is that new ordinance? The new ordinance, I'm going to have to look up the colors, because I have to remind myself of what's blue, what's yellow, and what's red. Those are the, excuse me, three colors that you'll find, I think, I've got to go down and check the dots again, on the sidewalk, sidewalks of Pacific Avenue, that are supposed to liberalize the situation for folks who are non-commercial users of the sidewalk. And even for commercial users, at least not in the spot where he was, because it didn't change that at all. It is still illegal to be where Morgani was, as far as I know. I've got to go back and look at the area in front of Dell Williams Jewelers. But Morgani was, of course, the accordion player who a year ago, when the police approached him, finally, after a decade, and said, you know, we're going to have to ticket you, too, even though we've ignored you for 10 years, because it's the law. They say they're getting bolder. You see, they somehow feel they have a special writ to enforce these absurd laws that the city council creates when they choose to do so, of course. And Morgani didn't like it, and he said, well, I'm not going to play her anymore. And that produced a kind of a bubble of concern in the media. Even DiCenzo created a great cartoon that showed a bunch of officers trying to bust the Morgani statue, which is in front of all places, the Bookshop Coonerty, or Bookshop Santa Cruz. In any case, he said he was going to come back, or the papers said he was going to come back and play at the on private property in the alcove of the Rittenhouse Mausoleum at the corner of, what is it, Church and Pacific? I think that's what it is. Right across from, right down the street from the Cinema 9. And I haven't seen him there. I assume he may well have been there, but that's private property. Anyone can always play on private property. Of course, a decade ago they took to harassing people playing music in bars and other places. They being the city and the police. And I don't have a lot of up to date information. I'd have to review what the situation is with that. But on public on private property outside, I guess unless you are doing unlawfully disturbing noise. When you're alone and rents are making you homeless, you can always go downtown, which four of us were cited for with $350 tickets outside the Bookshop Coonerty some years back. Of course, it was a politically motivated prosecution, and we lost, although it probably has discouraged us from singing on the sidewalks, actually. But that's the law they were using before the latest series of laws a year ago that simply made it difficult to find a place to be. Plus, of course, the infamous move along every hour law, which is being both misused and used to the detriment of the First Amendment and people's good humor, the ability of performers to play for a community that wants to hear them, but all, of course, to assist the bureaucrats in maintaining on paper a nice sense of everything is in order. And, of course, the conservative factions on the city council, led by Cynthia Matthews and now Pamela Comstock and others, Heinrichs of the Pacific Trading Company, or, I don't know, the Pizza My Heart gang, or these are people in the past who complained about street performers. There weren't many complaints that I was able to find in any kind of public records, but there were a few, and apparently they rule the roost, and they created the move-along law through the terminally pig-headed, sorry about that, Ed Porter, pig-headed Porter, I should call him. Maybe that's the wrong phrase. I don't know. But he created that law in 2003, actually. And it was ratified by the Rotkin Matthews City Council in that time. Those are Mike Rotkin is a former mayor of Santa Cruz. Cynthia Matthews is a current council member. May she depart in peace as soon as possible. So, performance pens go into effect today, legally, although I was told by Scarf Lady Kate Wenzel that they, in fact, have been misinforming people. Maybe they're just trying to give them warning, they being the hosts, you know, the yellow-jacketed, underpaid police snitches that walk around with big grins on their faces trying to make everybody feel so happy, provided they're spending money or not violating the huge network of the intricate network of rules that has been created by city council to allow police to find something wrong with what you're doing. Because, you know, even if you carry a rule book around you, and even if the police are making it up as they go, which is frankly more often the case than you would think, you're not going to challenge guys with guns and badges and the whole legal system behind them generally. And if you do challenge them with any anger, suddenly a squad of, you know, 4 to 8 police officers with as many cars shows up to demonstrate force in a non-military way. I'm sure Mayor Don Lane would tell us non-military, very non-military. That's not our police department, right? Well, Don, of course, has been out to lunch, I think, since he got onto council in 1988, but he certainly has been out to lunch more recently. And we're going to be hearing some of Don Lane tonight, talking with, and his only, as far as I know, walk with street performers and activists who are concerned about this protest pen law. And again, I should tell you what it is in case it's new to you. It probably isn't if you're a regular listener. These are dots that have been created. They've actually been on the sidewalk for a couple of months. And, well, let me take a brief musical break, and when I come back, I will have the actual, I will give you the color code so you won't be performing in the wrong areas, because that would be a, goodness, what is it, $200 to $400 fine, and that would be bad. You know, you don't want to do that. Or at least, you know, somebody coming along and denouncing you for doing that and so forth. One of the main impacts of these laws is to make people feel uncomfortable coming downtown, fearful, those who are the part of the street community. And, of course, for those who don't want to see them there, makes them much more comfortable. So, but if you want to afflict the comfortable and comfort the afflicted, then you want to fight these laws, which, as a bumper sticker fan, I want to do. So let's hear a little music, and I'll be back with more accurate and colorful statistics on what these performance pen dots are all about. So, let's do it.
The carnival came to town when I was 9 or 10. That day I learned lesson I don't need to learn again. With a poster of a woman wearing nothing but a snake and 10 cents in my pocket, I was right for the take. See, Sheila Lane, all it costs is one thin dime. See, Sheila bite the snake, I think it might bite her this time. See, Sheila bite the snake, give me your dime, then get in line. I went into the tent, I could not believe my eyes. In the center of the room was a cage full of lies. Sheila was a rabbit with a sleepy gopher snake. You might call it truth, I call it fate. See Sheila fight the snake, all it costs is one thin dime. See Sheila fight the snake, I think it might bite her this time. See Sheila fight the snake, give me your dime, then get in line.
$300 million
is a whole lot of dimes. It's like walking in that tent again, just like old times. But this time there's no Sheila, this time there's more at stake. The devil took your ticket, you've been bit by the snake.
See Sheila fight the snake, all it costs is one thin dime. See Sheila fight the snake, I think it might bite her this time. See Sheila bite the snake, give me your dime, then get in line.
Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, I think you'll try it too. This time I'm gonna be ready, this time I'm gonna save my dime. For I have seen Sheila, I have seen the snake, and only a chump would put up with that double-talking fake.
See Sheila fight the snake, all it costs is one thin dime. See Sheila fight the snake, I think it might bite her this time. See Sheila fight the snake, give me your dime, then get in line. See Sheila fight the snake, see Sheila fight the snake, see Sheila fight the snake, see Sheila fight.
Well, that wasn't very political, was it? Annie and the Vets, singing Peace to Power, See Sheila fight the Snake. I thought it was Bite the Snake, but I guess I got some wax in my ears. I don't know where I got that one, but must have gotten it on the streets, maybe. It's fairly old, but a decade old. And I would like to apologize to my listeners now, because I have discovered it wasn't at the November 25th council meeting, but at the November 18th council meeting, that the final reading of the performance pens ordinance happened. And that meant that a month from November 18th on December 18th, the law became effective. So it is currently the law in Santa Cruz. And what is this law? This says that the city manager or the city manager's designee shall be authorized to establish designated zones on sidewalks in the community commercial neighborhood, commercial beach, central business district, and residential tourist zone districts within which either street performers, either using display devices or other engaged in free speech activities using display devices. And I'll explain for those who don't know what a display device is. It's not a sign. It's like a table or a box something, or a guitar case, or a cup. It's a catch-all term designed essentially to catch up anybody who's on the sidewalk seeking money or actually doing anything that involves any kind of a surface. And they've banned putting out blankets on the sidewalk, so you have to raise it a foot above the sidewalk, which is supposed to make it less of a trip and fall hazard. I would think it would make it more, frankly, but it's really, I think, again, you know, part of their aesthetic. Let's turn this into a more upscale approach, and also along the way it makes it more difficult for people to, you know, in an impromptu way set up their meager stuff on the sidewalk to do what they need to do if, for example, they're trying to sell some items for food or show their artwork in search of donation, that sort of thing. But what this says is the city manager's designee in all these zones shall set up zones within which the people can perform or engage in speech with a display device. Said spaces shall be delineated by markings on the spaces shall be demarked as follows. Yellow sidewalk marking. Tabling spaces shall be demarked red sidewalk marking. And spaces within which both performing and other speech, such as tabling, are permitted shall be demarcated as blue sidewalk marking. Although I'm not sure that tabling is a speech activity, for example. I guess if you got any kind of literature or petitions, but I don't know. If you have artwork, I guess that's, I suppose you're showing, yeah, that would be speech. And again, as I said before, this doubles the amount within which people can set up their tables, because before they had limited you to this completely undoable or very, very hard to do area of 12 square feet, which is three of those squares on Pacific Avenue. Now it's 24 squares, and they've designated, they claim, 61 zones. There may be that many zones, but most of them are not in places where they can be effectively used, or at least certainly at least a sizable number of them aren't usable. And it's also now very fixed, so you have to, you can't kind of move around to different places where adjust to whoever else is on the sidewalk. You have to be actually within this these particular areas, or you're subject to these significantly large fines that people don't want. Also, it means every hour you have to move 100 feet away, which may mean you can't spend more than 1 or 2 hours down there because the zones may be used by other people. The zone, you may not be able to go to the next adjacent zone because that may be within 20 feet, as many of the zones are kind of concentrated within an area between Walnut Street and Cathcart. So there are other problems with this ordinance. The basic problem, of course, is that there's no need to go after performers, tablers, panhandlers, vendors downtown, unless you just don't want them there. Because there's been no showing of significant problems with these folks. Just some people don't like them, and they have to find a good reason to go after them. And, of course, this has to do with homeless people, too, because homeless people use the public spaces more than any of us because they live there one way or another. They may not sleep there because that's illegal. During the day, it's not, but it's illegal to lie down anywhere on Pacific Avenue. But it is... it is where they are, and it's one of the initial reasons, although the claim was it's behavioral problems that initially they used as their pretext. Then of course, it's become more recently the pretext for going after homeless people has been public safety problems. And in San Jose, it was environmental destruction problems. But in fact, none of that has much to do with the real destruction, the real rationale for it. And it's these are the kind of the cover stories that are used. There are a couple of interesting things about this. First, I notice that this doesn't just limit the ability of a guy with a guitar and an open guitar case to play on Pacific Avenue. It limits him or her all over town. in any of the community commercial, community neighborhood, commercial beach, central business district, or tourist residential zone districts. And I don't have a map of those currently because I really focused on the central business district, which is Pacific Avenue, and a little bit on the beach, which is, I guess, commercial beach. But community commercial covers Soquel and Mission. I don't know what commercial neighborhood or tourist residential zones cover. I'll have to take a look at that. It covers, I believe, significant parts of the city. And I don't know, no one's reported seeing any dots in any of these other areas, which means it's completely illegal to be there. And so I would just love to have a, well, I may set up a table in one of these areas and wait for a ticket. Because the only lawsuit I've ever won in Santa Cruz had to do with the late Sergeant Butchie Baker and his pals in the Sushi Now kiosk in front of New Lease Market and numerous other officers in the Santa Cruz Police Department getting together to try to run me off where I was in front of New Leaf Market at a table, claiming I was blocking the sidewalk. When, of course, the sidewalk was, I don't know, 30 feet wide at that time or wider. There was no enclosed area in front of New Leaf Market at that time with a fence. There were just the kiosks. In fact, when somebody called me and told me that they were enforcing these ordinances prematurely, and apparently they weren't, and I apologize for giving out the wrong information there, but it's always best, by the way, even if you listen to what I'm saying, to go back to the ordinance itself. It's online. You can read it. You can see when it was passed. You don't need to take anybody's word for it. If you can, always go back to the source, not just the individual who's claiming to be authoritative, as I often do, and as others do, too. I suggested, you know, and I that it's... If you want to deal with a couple years in court, you may end up with $5,000, which is what I was able to get. I got $2,500, and the attorneys got $2,500. We settled. The main point is not the money. The main point is it's reasserting the rights of the public to be there. That's really the issue, and it's always been the issue for me. So anyway, again, reminding you, yellow means you can perform there. Whatever that means. It isn't really defined. Red means you can table there. I guess that would theoretically mean like political tabling, a table with jewelry, vending, artwork. And then blue would mean you can do both. So, what's wrong with that? Well, the laws that were previously in place, are still in place for people sitting and panhandling. And those are poor people we're talking about mostly, or elderly and disabled people, who cannot allowed, for example, to use, they weren't previously allowed to use any but 1% or less of the sidewalk if they wanted to actually sit down on the sidewalk. And you may say, yeah, but what about all the wonderful benches? And there are benches where it's legal to sit for an hour and then you are a criminal if you don't move when told to move. That's a law that's pretty unique to Santa Cruz. Maybe it's been picked up by other cities, or maybe we got it from somewhere else. But Santa Cruz is the only city where they have a parking meter, you know, a meter on the bench. It isn't even a meter. You can't put another dime in to sit there for another 10 minutes. It's illegal. And I'm sure that political apologists for this law will tell you, yeah, but the police don't enforce it except where there's a problem. And that may well be true. But the problem is in the eye of the beholder. And for some, the very appearance of certain kinds of people downtown is a problem. Officers Azua has been accused of racial profiling. Officer Barnett has a record of giving 7 times as many citations to African Americans in the Pacific Avenue area as are present in the population. They make up, I don't know, 1.4% of the population of the county. And they make up 10% of his citations. I guess they're just a bunch of criminals, right? I don't think so. And, of course, homeless people make up 70% of Barnett's citations in the Pacific Avenue area. So those homeless people are really criminals. Of course, they are really criminals because the laws have been created to make natural and innocent behavior crimes if the police don't want them to do to be there in that spot at that time. It gives a particular class of armed thugs, and that's what police officers are when they're enforcing these kinds of laws. They are armed thugs. They are using fear and force to unfairly and improperly enforce ordinances that have nothing to do with public health and safety. And that's the way I see it. Now, you may see it differently, and this is a call-in talk show. So call in, 427-3772, 427-FRSC. So again, the concerns, well, I didn't really finish the concern. The concern I have is because the 14-foot rules, which has at 14-foot forbidden zones, as I've traditionally described this, you're not allowed to sit within 14 feet of a building, 14 feet of a kiosk, 14 feet of a crosswalk, 14 feet of a bench, 14 feet of a recycling machine, 14 feet of a trash can, 14 feet of a directory sign, 14 feet of a sculpture, which leaves less than 1% of the sidewalk. If you also subtract 14 feet of a sidewalk cafe leased area that took over the public sidewalk. So not only does the do you have to deal with these leased areas that are now illegal unless you're willing to pay for the, you know, the cafe latte or the fancy drinks or the overpriced food there, which sometimes is very tasty, I must admit. But you have to be 14 feet away from the exterior limit of those places. And you cannot be anywhere between the fence of these areas and the curb. And I'm 99% positive of that. That's a law that's been on the books for a long time and was expanded last year. And I certainly acknowledge I was wrong about the date that this current blue, yellow, and red dot, the Dodo dot performance pen law went into effect. It was December 18th, not December 25th. I guess they wanted to give us a little time to get ready for Christmas, you know. Or not, actually. Beat out the Christmas mob by having the laws set down beforehand. In any case, because you have to be in all these 14-foot zones, not be in these 14-foot areas, these 14-foot forbidden zones, and you also have to be within the performance zones if you're a performer, it, again, reduces the space for people who are not performers, vendors, and if you're a panhandler, you still are not allowed to sit and with a sign on the sidewalk inside a performance zone if it is 14 feet inside the 14-foot forbidden zone. So while those restrictions seem, that's my understanding. Now, I could be wrong about that, and I want to. That's my tentative concern and criticism that panhandlers, unlike performers and tablers and vendors, are getting specially restricted areas. It's really a little unclear how much space is left for panhandlers for a couple of reasons. One is not only is the 14-foot setbacks still applying, but they are not really, if the performance spaces that others use are within 14 feet, panhandlers can't use them because of the 14-foot setback rule. And they will be put into competition with performers and others, because performers are going to say, hey, get out of this area. I want to do my performing here because I can't do it anywhere else. They've shrunk the spaces, so get moving. So it tends to create more friction, not that that is the customary dialogue between people on the streets, but it may be what is being pressed. It's like pushing people together, crowding people together, which really creates the impression what you really want is the people to leave, or as Take Back Santa Cruz folks would say, to make it less welcoming to the needy, the homeless, the impoverished, or as they would say, the needle users, the bums, the junkies, the drugsters, the, you know, all those folks that you'll find in a house population in abundance. But there's no attempt to go after them, nor should there be, of course. the whole drug war is a, you know, a nice money-making venture and political game that the Republicans, Democrats jumped on too, Clinton as well. But the, you know, Reagan created a lot of this back in the early 80s, the whole crack propaganda war. And of course, the earlier marijuana war, which is now beginning, finally, sanity is beginning to rule in some places. Though I don't think here in Santa Cruz necessarily, in spite of what you may think about the city being a progressive city. In any case, if you have reports about what's happening on the streets, if you've been performing out there or been watching others perform or been observing how police and hosts are treating people using these pens and how they're dealing with it, I'd like to know about it. You can give a call to the Huff line, 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and that's something I encourage you to do. And Don Lane, who's now the mayor, when he was vice mayor some months ago, while the staff of the city council, I don't know if it was the city councilor or the city regime that really is the city manager, really, which runs the city, but the city council acts like it does. Usually, actually, they don't act like it does, but that's the illusion that most people have. Back in this spring, there was a decision to give the city staff the ability to set up the locate these performance pens, these dotted performance pens up and down Pacific Avenue, and also in all these other zones, which, of course, I'm not aware has been done yet, so I'd be curious to know if anybody's seen any dots anywhere else on any other sidewalks outside the downtown area. If you have, let me know. If you haven't, let me know that, too. Again, 423-HUFF. The number here, however, in the studio, if you want to call in with your experiences on air, is 427-3772, 427-3772. So Lane and Comstock, I think, handed this whole thing over to Scott Collins and Julie Hendy, who are bad pennies in my book, unfortunately, for some of their past behaviors. I'm not aware they've changed. Scott's a nice guy. Julie, you know, I mean, there's nothing wrong with these people as human beings, but when they become as bureaucrats who are enforcers of and creators of absurd laws that criminalize the behavior of the poorer people on the streets. Well, then you got to call him out. Collins is notorious for essentially, he's either lying or withholding information and not being accurate in his statements about it. Around the bike seizure by the Santa Cruz Police Department of several years ago. The bike church, the attempt to deny the bike church the surplus bikes that the police department got, that gave over to them, and that they fixed up and gave to nonprofits. Now they're all going to the dump, and a small number going to the teen center. And Collins refused to present the documents on the basis of which the city council voted for that particular nonsensical and abusive solution to what to do with surplus bikes. Julie Hendy is notorious in my book for earlier activities. She's really sort of in the midst of colluding with merchants in criminalizing spaces downtown. She was notorious, most notorious for me, for creating, turning the seating area in front of Rosie McCann's in that area, which is sort of the waist-high planter area, very comfortable to sit down on, into an unseatable area by getting the police department to give money into the budget of the redevelopment agency to move the pointed fence area out slightly. That's around the pendulum sculpture in front of, again, that whole area, Pacific Trading Company and so forth. This was to get rid of Cosmic Chris, a performer. At least that's what Tom Noddy's thoughts were on this. And because he was performing there and they didn't like it and they wanted him gone, and they were also pushing for, and I think they were pushing for the move-along law created by Ed Porter. So, what do we have? We have Don Lane, who for 6 months made no announcements of any public meetings, ditto with Julie Hendy and Scott Collins, to seek out any information from street performers or other members of the public, other than select groups that they went to, such as presumably merchants and their conservative political allies, but we don't even know who they were. And there was no consultation done with any groups of performers in any public way. But 3 days before this law was coming up for a final reading, Lane agreed, actually no, for coming up for a first reading, 2 weeks before that, Lane agreed to meet with performers. And this is a tape of some of that meeting. I played some of it earlier, a couple months ago. I'm now playing the rest of it. And you're going to hear the dialogue between Lane and the performers and activists. I think Pat and John Colby were there. Coral, who used to play with SAFE, I think she still does, Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression, the now largely defunct group that used to play every Wednesday night in front of New Leaf Market in violation of the downtown ordinances in order to encourage others to reassert the right to play in public spaces without fear. And I believe Kate Wenzel, the scarf lady who had been, by her report and by the reports of several other activists, seriously harassed by Officer Bradley Barnett when he wasn't busy giving out racial tickets and homeless tickets. He was going after her, apparently. At least that was part of his operational behavior. And they all were having this kind of dialogue with Don Lane. And we're going to hear some of it now. If anybody's interested in the earlier part of the dialogue, give me a call at 423-HUFF, and I will alert you to which particular show it was on. You may be able to find it by looking on the HUFF website. These shows are archived there. The HUFF website is huffsantacruz.org. And you then go to the name of the show, Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, look for the descriptions of the show, and then put in Lane's name, Lane, and you'll find probably his name somewhere in a fall show for the earlier part of this particular interview.
Because I don't think you plan to change your process.
Because
he apologized.
Did he? I didn't know that. Yeah,
he said that, but he didn't represent the vendor.
It didn't seem as though he was coming.
Anyway, can we get? I don't think we can get a response from you, Don, because I don't think you plan to change your process. But do you?
Well, but see, that's
part of the process.
He's here right now.
but the thing is,
you can call a public meeting. It's very
it's
simple.
Really, I think you really are leaving out such an important part of how this unfolded is that. Okay, so back in March or whenever it was that I brought this to the council with Pamela, that was like just an opening. We didn't decide a thing there. We said, hey, the ordinance we adopted created some unintended consequences that don't seem good, and what about like looking at a framework like this? And that was at that moment. I was very clear in what my idea which was kind of what we're talking about here, which was having spaces indicated on the ground that allowed for greater flexibility of size than the old ordinance. And I kind of said, and it was like, put it out there and said, what do you think? And the council didn't say, okay, we're adopting this. They said, this sounds like a reasonable thing. Let's look at a new ordinance. What would it take to change it? And that's what's been going on. It's like the public process doesn't just occur in front of you.
What public process? Not me. What public process for street performance?
You have to notify people. You have to reach out to people. And take and give.
So what Lane is saying is that because the city council meetings happen and you get 2 minutes to speak there and they'll advise you 72 hours before that something's coming up, that's the public process he envisions that really involves involving the street performers in the discussion of where these performance pens ought to be. Bringing a prefabricated, completed map to city council for a final vote and letting the public, you know, have their little we like it, we don't like it, 2 minute spiel is his idea of what a public process is. And this is our mayor, mind you, that thinks this. So you should be aware of what we're really facing. And he says this with all seriousness, as though, you know, it's common sense, it's reasonable, it's been happening for years, this is where it's at. How can you say we don't have a public process? And the answer is quite obvious. We don't have a public process because no street performers were engaged in the creation of these pens in the way of any kind of meaningful process where there was an announcement of a public hearing on it, where the people who were setting up the spaces said, what do you want in this situation? Let's all talk about it. None of that happened. And I asked him if anything was going to happen in the next 6 months, and he said, not necessarily. They'll be coming back in 6 months later, and you'll be able to talk about it then when we've looked it all over, and there'll be a council meeting, and there'll be another vote, and that'll be that. So we have the same situation as we had in a way that happened with the Bearcat. That is to say, the armored vehicle that the police want, that they call a rescue vehicle, that some of us call a tank without a turret downtown, or not downtown, wherever they want to use it. I can envision it downtown, where they brought that in at the very last minute without any kind of consultation with community groups about that, but they want to accept this Homeland Security grant. And this will be coming back to the City Council on January 13th at the first council meeting of the new year, by the way, and is slated to be a protest, which I expect and hope will be a large protest. Indeed, the last protest of City Council on December 9th caused the mayor so much consternation that she closed down the meeting and abandoned the agenda so that she could maintain her coronation ceremonies for the new council members. I think she violated the Brown Act when she proceeded to make decisions locking out the public. But Don Lane and Micah Posner disagree. So let's hear some more of this. I got a call from David Silva, who was a former city council candidate and an activist in the 90s, probably beyond that as well. I'm into the 2000s. He's a regular caller, as regular listeners know, and I invite him to call back at any point he wants to make a... I think he had a point he wanted to make. I have a problem in trying to field calls during these... during the show, generally, when it's not a public call on the air, because I am also trying to take notes as the show goes on, so I can put up descriptions later online, and that is a difficult task to do if I also want to respond intelligently and fully to people who are calling in. Call in 427-3772, and we'll do what we can. Again, it's Don Lane on the streets. We're standing, I believe, near O'Neill's, a little bit up from O'Neill's toward the coffee roasting company. And he's fielding a lot of questions from people who are not the happiest crowd, but and also they're a little bit more questioning than usual, but often I find that people talking to a city official immediately lapse into a deferential mode under the illusion that if they're just more respectful of this guy's assumed authority, they'll be likely to be heard more and their reasonable arguments considered more fully, which is just not true. You're heard more if you have more power. And power can come in a number of ways. It can come through money and financial power. It can come through your associations with powerful people. It can come through knowing a lot of people on the streets who share the same interests you do, and your willingness to get together and stand up for your rights, and stand up for your right to use the public spaces, and your right to oppose special commercial interests attempt to usurp those commercial spaces, either in many ways, and sometimes direct action, ways that involve civil disobedience, ways that involve civil resistance are the way to go.
Robert's bringing up a great thing about accountability, but I think we need to focus on the future rather
Wenzel.
Than what's happened in the past.
Well, see what wasn't done and
you know,
make
more
it happen in the future.
But there's no guarantee he's going to do that. He simply says, "Oh, there'll be a meeting in 6 months. And this is all very tentative," is what he said.
Let's see more of this.
It's very possible that I could do more proactive.
We're not talking about the council.
I know,
and the
but
staff.
Let me just talk about me. I'm talking about me.
We're not putting the blame on you.
I am. Let me just say this.
Why not?
So, there's, you make up your own number.
I'll be right back.
50 or
It's not just that they're actually giving something.
Well, the concern is separating musicians from artists and vendors.
We're not asking for you just give us something for nothing.
Right, right. She's a visual artist too, which you may not have gotten.
I do the
copy listing company where the art is an addictive substance display is.
Most of the spaces that are allowed for artists to show their material are also available for performance.
Right.
In most instances, it doesn't separate the artist from the performer.
That's a total of 2% of the site.
Are there spaces that are only for merchandise and that would not, that you would be told that you can't? Because this is our First Amendment right, and I think that.
And this is a guy who's talking as a guy who used to have a sign. He has a large art display, very carefully crafted, so it is within the current, or what were the current legal limits, which was within 12 square feet. Now I think it's gotten, you know, because it's now 24 square feet, although it has to be within the performance pens, it's broader. He was having a discussion with Lane about this, you know, pointing out that he believes it's his free speech right to be able to show his art. And of course, what Lane's trump card is, while that's true, the courts have essentially emasculated that right by implying time, place, and manner restrictions, allowing cities to do this. And so, though it hasn't been challenged, it's illegal, for example, to ask for a dime after dark by holding up a sign anywhere in Santa Cruz. And this law was created by City Attorney Barrasoni under the claim that it's an appropriate First Amendment compliant law because it allows that a person can hold up a sign during the daytime, but not at night. You know, it's too much of a menace. I mean, you can have neon signs at night, you can commercial signs, you can have large signs blocking the sidewalk or taking up a significant part of the sidewalk that are actually illegal signs. But you can't have a poor person holding up a sign that says, you know, need money for food. It's really profoundly outrageous, profoundly. And yet it's become part and parcel here of the scene that people aren't even aware of often. And so they get very amazed when you hear about Fort Lauderdale arresting a 90-year-old guy. They didn't know that Santa Cruz was doing the same thing 25 years ago to people like Sandra Loringer and Jane Immler, Malu Pinecrone, Linda Edwards, me, Red Top Robert Flory, and others who were serving free food. And because they wanted to get rid of poor people. They don't care. Just like they don't give a damn, the powers that be, whether they're progressive, labeled, or Democrat, or Republican, they acquire a kind of heartless invulnerability and insensibility because they are shielded, because they somehow believe they are ennobled by their power. They are required. They are lifted above the rest of us. And it's just complete horseshit. It's just not true. And it's very dangerous stuff. You get, you know, a federal administration that has a hit list. It can target anybody in the country now. With apparently the assent of the Supreme Court, at least there's been no dissent so far. It has, you know, held people in jail in torture for the last 13 years in Guantanamo. And there's still over 100 people there, charged with nothing. No charges. And it's grotesque. And these are things that are rationalized away by one politician after another. But they're real. And they have their reflections and their imitations and their consequences at the local level as well.
It needs to be reinforced here.
Right.
And so out of that, I can't enforce my First Amendment right in any part of a public space that is I am a citizen of this country, then that's where you run into an issue. For an amount of time or, spatially at a point, you could say, well, you're blocking the sidewalk, but if you're clearly not, there's not a problem.
Yeah,
you could
point
to that if there's an issue. But if there's not a problem, then
yeah,
I'm just out here expressing my First Amendment right fundamentally, and I really shouldn't be told that I can't do that at all, ever.
He should be told. He shouldn't be told that. But what he doesn't realize is that Don again has the trump card of time, place, and manner that is being used. Until enough people say no, that's not the way it's got to be. I don't mean enough people going to the next election 2 years down the road and voting for that. I mean enough people saying no in a civil, peaceful, strong way and backing it up with their bodies and their time and their willingness to insist that things be... that ordinary liberties, ordinary respect be provided to the whole community, and not just those who have commercial interests that are running the town.
Yeah. I should come, you know, I can talk about Jesus, I can talk about Islam for all day long.
I think he has a good point. I think that legally that might not pass muster, discriminating against people by separating them based on what type of...
Absolutely. Yeah, it's not good.
This is our public space. Sorry.
Yeah,
so
I don't
there
know
is a
that.
There is a rationale for
but it's not
making
a
distinction
rationale.
Between the
legal.
Person who's...
It's not a legal rationale.
Yes, it is. It's absolutely a legal rationale.
I don't think so.
Between,
I think that Arizona
there's two things
you
that you're not paying attention to, and you're going to let me have a turn now, right? One is, if someone's just standing here preaching about Jesus, they're not actually setting anything on the sidewalk. They're not owning that space. Once you put this card here, you've got it.
But
and it,
kind of. For the moment, I mean,
yeah,
I'm standing here, and I am here, too. What if I just have a sign?
Wait, wait, can I say something?
What if I'm just holding a sign?
And we have a caller calling in. We're going to pause briefly while our caller calls in. Hey there, caller.
Hello,
hi there.
Hello there, Uncle Robert. Hello there, freaks out there in freak land. I am going to start spending my retirement time doing some kind of fundraising. And you know what I love to do the most, Robert, is dance. So I'm going to be dancing with a hat on the sidewalk for causes. And I think repealing the sleeping ban is going to be the first one. I hope I'm not the only one that decides to do this. We gotta start raising money to repeal the sleeping ban. It's ridiculous. It's one of the sad things about this democracy is that it's bought and sold, and we have to play that game for right now. Don't get me started.
Oh, why not?
So anyway, so your callers can call in and tell me what would be the best corners to get the biggest bang for my buck.
Well, the real problem with that is, I mean, it's you're welcome to do it. It's actually completely legal to dance.
Is it legal? Oh, shoot.
No, it is legal. what is not legal, however, is to sit down on the sidewalk and rest.
Oh, I'll have to rest.
Well,
I'll have scheduled rest, and I'll send
I'm
the
sorry.
Rest schedule
no, no,
to the
no, 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 no resting. Sorry, caller. No resting is allowed. At least not on...
Well, I'll send the police officers my resting schedule
not
so
on,
they can know
yeah,
when to rest
well,
me.
Well, there you better. 98% of the sidewalk is banned for resting.
Hey,
you see.
You know, I they never arrest me. I want to know what the hell is going on here. It's about time they arrest me, don't you think?
Well, you've got to, you know, be patient. Maybe they'll come around to arresting you.
Okay. Anyway, it's all for a good cause. And to keep up the good work, Robert, we've got to repeal the sleeping ban. It's inhuman. We have such a law.
Hey, thank you, David.
Okay.
Bye-bye. And that was David Silva, who I ran into one of his election posters the other day. A great poster of a kind of a pussycat. He ran for city council in 1996 until he was thrown into a pillar by Sergeant Andy Crane at the city council because other people were doing what's called the lockdown protest. They actually locked themselves to the furniture, demanding that the sleeping ban end. And he was simply trying to present petitions to the council on that issue. And the sergeant decided he was a bad boy and threw him out the door into a pillar, and he was unable to really complete his campaign in 1996. Not that he would have won, mind you. You have to have more resources and staff and all the kinds of stuff than the people on the left with the sensible solutions actually have historically. Almost with, I guess there's some exceptions in Santa Cruz. I don't think so, really. Hard to find them. All right, let's get back to the Don Lane on the sidewalk debating. And the point that Lane will tell you, that, and he said this at City Council, you can, you know, and I was telling David here, the caller, that you can simply, you can dance all day on the sidewalk. You can speak all day on the sidewalk. You can't put up a small table with literature, though. That's illegal. See, they've made that illegal. And you can't sit down on the sidewalk. Now, what you can do is you can bring your own chair. So I'm going to have to advise the dancing David, maybe that's what we're going to call him henceforth, when he actually carries out his threat to dance away the sleeping van, It's legal to bring your own chair and put it wherever you want on the sidewalk. Provided, you know, it's not in a narrow part of the sidewalk where if somebody asks you to move so they can get past, you don't move. That becomes a crime. But it's legal to do that. Whereas it's not legal to sit on 98% of the sidewalk directly with your butt, which, of course, obviously is discriminatory for those who can't afford to bring their own chair with them. Maybe Huff should start supplying chairs to people on the sidewalk.
You. This is not you.
But I think the
this is my belongings,
you.
Though.
Yeah,
that's the difference. I can bring my belongings out, though. Your person, your individual person, and your belongings are not the same thing.
Your distinction without a difference.
That's right. No, there's. You're telling me all objects have rights the same as humans?
The preacher.
Apparently, there are objects that have rights. All of Don's merchant friends have their signs up and down Pacific Avenue, and it's completely illegal for them to have signs. I keep repeating this. It kind of amazes me. And I hadn't known this until about a year ago when I began to research it. But the Public Works, or was it the Planning Department? One of the city, anyway, the city's department advised me, and they sent me to the code section that said, it is not legal to have a freestanding sign on Pacific Avenue, a commercial sign. You can't even get a permit to do that. Yet you will walk down Pacific Avenue and you will see a dozen of such signs on the sidewalk. And not just during the day, but also at night. Mostly during the day, admittedly. And so objects do have rights if they're commercial objects. It's just non-commercial objects that they don't want around there. And Lane is either blind or duplicitous on this issue, or maybe self-deluding. It's hard to say. I mean, politicians do this, you know, and one has to strongly denounce what they do, at the same time understanding that that what happens to normal people when they enter political roles is they become deformed, and they start adopting these tactics, which do their humanity no service and do the rest of us no service, but have to be distinguished from them as human beings. Many people have told me how much they like Don Lane. You know, he was the biggest vote getter at the election before last, which is why he's the mayor. The main vote getter gets elected mayor traditionally, and I don't know if that tradition has ever been broken while I've been here, although some people tried to break it in the 90s. So, let's hear more of this dispute and discussion. Lane is trying to explain how reasonable the proposal of these performance pens is. His a protagonist here, the artist free guy, is saying, I have a right to be anywhere and to show and display my art. And he says, and Lane is saying, your objects don't have rights. You know, we get a right to tax your objects. We get a right to license your objects. We get a right to move along your objects. Only, I would think, if there's a real problem in terms of congestion or a real problem in terms of a public safety or a public hazard. And that's never been the case. Or never in any consistent way that justified any of these laws. And they're not about that at all. That's what's so annoying when you hear these ridiculous reasons that they have for the laws. And have Lane do so with this sort of whiny sincerity, also rather lengthy, his statements are lengthy, lengthy as mine are, is annoying as well. It's also annoying when he likes to pose as a friend of the homeless. I don't think he's just posing either. I think he believes it. His problem is that his actions show otherwise. And no doubt, you know, we would hear something like the Micah Posner excuse. Well, I do the best I can, but, you know, I only have a certain amount of political capital and the rest of the council is against me. And, you know, that sort of thing. Doesn't impress me. It's bullshit. It shows political ambition rather than integrity to basic human rights.
The preacher has the right. The preacher has the right to bring his backpack along. You can't say, "Sorry, sir, because your backpack, you have to move along." You don't say that because whatever he has with him has rights, provided it doesn't take an inordinate amount of space.
As long as he's not obstructing,
you know,
the flow of traffic,
right.
And he's not impeding any disabled person or any pedestrian in causing any health and safety hazard.
And that's John Colby making that point, but I don't think Don Lane supports that point. See, Lane supports the law as it has been constructed over the last 20 years and as he is now reconstructing it with these performance pens, which is to say police have absolute power to move people off of 98% of the sidewalk 99% if they're just sitting down anywhere or somewhere. But not because there's a, you know, a blockage of traffic, not for any of those reasons, but because that's what we wrote into the law, as though that were some sort of holy writ.
You know, I mean, bring your stroller down here with your child in it. You can bring a shopping cart down, and they'll let you do that and tell you that's okay, too. I mean, it's not, it's just, this is totally mobile besides the point, right? You know, I mean,
that's why you can be asked, because it's a thing and because it's mobile, that it could be, that the rules could be that after some period of time you have to go to a different location.
Right. Well, what if I was just holding a sign?
And you could stay here as long as you want.
That's interesting.
Says that, though, not because it's a reasonable statement, but because it currently is provided for under the law, and because they haven't yet cooked up something that will enable the city council to give the police the power to limit that. They actually have limited that for panhandling. It's, you know, it's a misdemeanor offense to do that twice, at night, or within 14 feet of a building, or on any of the 98% of the sidewalk where panhandling is banned, even with a sign. And actually, the actual wording of the law is even worse, though it's never been enforced. The wording of the law says not only does the panhandler have to be within 14 feet, but anybody his sign is addressed to also has to be outside the forbidden zone. So the law is actually completely unconstitutional on its face. It has, however, never been enforced as the wording reads. Otherwise, they would be in trouble. They should have been in trouble anyway. They are in trouble anyway. That is to say, we're in trouble anyway. But let's hear some more Don Lane rationalizing and justifying the performance bans.
Suppose he had a backpack with him while he was holding a sign.
Suppose he puts it on the ground.
See, that's technicality.
Can I ask you a question? What's the whole point of making it so that certain... I want to know what colored dots go with what vendors or what performers.
So there's yellow is for a performance.
I want to know.
John, don't say it's confusing now when it isn't exist yet. So just because you can't understand it conceptually is not... Once it's really clearly
it's being proposed for a city council meeting tomorrow.
Will there be a council meeting?
Yeah.
With a guide?
Yeah.
Can you answer my question?
But here's the thing. People come here every day from another place, and they've never been here before, and they come to do this kind of thing. And so this is what I've experienced. I've been here 4 years. Just over 4 years.
He and I know the same thing.
And what I've found is that people come in oftentimes, and because they're new folks here, they will just start doing all the things that aren't in the rules, and because the rules are enforced, but not like every 5 minutes.
And we have a caller. Hi, caller. You're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert. It's Doug Loisel. How are you?
Oh, Doug Loisel, the infamous former director of the Homeless Lack of Services Center, some years back now.
How are you?
I'm better, actually, than I was yesterday. Appreciate your calling in. You probably aren't listening to the show unless you've tuned to freakradio.org.
Actually, I'm not listening to the show. I'm driving back from my Christmas dinner.
You mean you don't have a computer in your car?
No. Internet's slow in my car.
Well, I know when we talked yesterday, you've been working with a couple of programs, one of them now in Monterey, one of them in Salinas, is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
And
actually, I'll go ahead.
No, you go ahead, please.
Oh, there's actually two programs in Salinas and one program in Monterey. And probably the program that's most germane to your show is the homeless runaway and youth program that's in Monterey. And we have a street outreach program where we distribute literature and give resources and referrals for youth who are homeless in the Monterey Peninsula area, and in fact all of Monterey County. And there's also a drop-in center where they can receive good services. There's also counseling available for youth who are not only homeless, but also who are struggling in their staying with their parents, where things maybe aren't in a positive situation. And so they're able to come in and get counseling not only for themselves, but for the family. Then we also have a 21-day respite program where the youth can move out of their home, their family, for a few days, let the dust settle, let the get some counseling, and then move back. So, so that's what I'm doing now.
You know, I got a. I regard you as a friend of mine, Doug, and I liked a lot of what you were trying to do here when you were head of the Homeless LACA Services Center. You were more accessible than any subsequent or prior head that I'm aware of. But I got to ask you some hard questions here. What's the budget of this this group you're with, the Homeless Runaway Youth Program?
Well, it's under Community Human Services, which is the overall nonprofit. The name of the program is Safe Place, Safe Passage. The budget is probably, the overall budget of the organization is about $4+ million. Probably the youth services program runs at around $400,000 or so, I would say, total.
Now, let's get specific here. I hear a lot of bullshit from the local poverty pimps about what kind of wonderful services they provide. We have the Downtown Accountability Project, they call themselves. I call them Downtowners Against the Poor. We have the Homeless LACA Services Center, which has $1 million a year but provides shelter most of the year for 46 people. At least that's they don't even have a drop-in shelter anymore. They have a waiting list. And they've destroyed their lockers, and they're spending their money to set up security fences and all kinds of ID
right.
cards and other crap. So these are control systems. These are not really they're intended to placate the public to believe that they're helping a bunch of people. And no doubt they do help some people. I'm not saying that doesn't happen. But let's look at the situation. Runaway youth program. I mean, I remember in the 60s and the 70s, they used to have the switchboard here in Santa Cruz and in San Francisco, the famous Haight-Ashbury switchboard, which really did help people. It was actually created by the people who wanted... actually, I'm not sure who created it, but I believe... must have been created by, or at least certainly was significantly supported by people who wanted to be able to have a place to leave their stuff, a place to, a job board where they could put up their job requests, a place where they have a ride board, they can ride to other cities, a place where they could access a telephone and use a phone, a place where they could access maybe suicide prevention of some kind, a place where they could find a place to sleep if they needed to. That has devolved into a system of criminalizing and stigmatizing people as being in certain categories, mentally ill, drug abuser, runaway youth. I don't know. I'm just wondering, is this one of those categories we have to worry about?
As far as
Well, in other words, are you do you have to enter a system and suddenly give out all this information to your organization before you get any quote services?
No.
No, excellent.
I think there's a short assessment, but you know, I always make sure that they keep it short. And the reason why you keep it short is somebody might just want a sandwich, right? Well, you don't want them to go down their whole psychological, mental health, family systems, relationship. You know, have they been pregnant in the last 2 years? Are they sexually active? Do they? You know, they might just want a sandwich. And so, basically,
yeah.
All they have to do to come in to get services is sign in. And the only reason why we have them sign in is because we have to keep track of duplicated and unduplicated clients for our grant. So it's a pretty seamless entry. It's a pretty seamless access to services. I think it is. I don't.
Well, all right. Wait. Let's test it out. I'm a young guy. I'm coming up here. Hey, man. What is this about? What do you got for me? What do I need to do to get a sandwich here?
Well, I think the street outreach program we've got an upstairs program that provides that sort of thing, and so you would have to come during half hours because we can't stay open 24/7. So you come during half hours, go upstairs, sign in.
When is the staff hours, man?
They're about 9 to 5.
Is that every day or just weekdays or?
Every day. Then we also provide a dinner on Thursday and breakfast on Tuesday.
And by the way, we're talking about a group in Monterey, right? What's the address of your group?
It is 544 Pearl Street. in Monterey, and it's called Safe Link.
So if I come back there and you know, you're going to give me a sandwich if I come in, and between 9 and 5 I can get a sandwich any time?
Sure.
And what kind of a sandwich do I get?
Whatever kind we have, really.
A bologna sandwich?
Not a bologna sandwich. So we actually do pretty well. We access food from the food bank. We get donations from Trader Joe's, and we also purchase food. So there's a pretty good mix of food all the time for whenever people need them. We have clothes that you can access, donated clothes, albeit you can store your backpack or your skateboard or whatever for a period of time, not forever, but we would hold it for you if you needed us to. If it was inclement weather, we provide hotel vouchers. And so if you will hand out one voucher and probably 4 to 6 youth, because they like to stay in groups, we'll access the room. We haven't ever had any trouble with vandalism or, you know, people tearing apart rooms or anything like that. We actually have a really good relationship with the hotel owners. And then if you'd like, you can also, during the day, get counseling service from our licensed, eligible social workers.
Suppose I want a job, man. I'm looking for a job. You got any way to get me a job?
Yeah, we have, we have relationships with businesses in the area, and we would set you up with a case manager, and the case manager would help you go through the steps that you need. If you needed assistance with a resume, we have a computer that you can access. If you need clothing, we have bought interview clothing for. We'll walk you through a mock interview process. I think we're pretty good at I think the staff is really committed, and they're pretty good about going the extra mile for these kids. I call them kids because, you know, I'm...
Well, how old do I got to be to, you know, go into a, you know, I mean, what's the deal? Can I just come in and, I mean, do you have to show my driver's license to show I'm under 18 or something?
No, you have to be under 21 to access the services. That's a homeless, runaway, and youth program. And, that's just part of our funding.
Do I have to prove I'm a runaway?
No. In fact, we have people who aren't runaways or kids who aren't runaways who come in and access services and just kind of hang out and, socialize with the other kids.
You got cops around there keeping an eye on things so that, you know, if they're going to come after me if I try smoking a joint or something?
Not
or a
so
cigarette,
much.
For that matter? I mean, you know.
Well, we encourage the youth to smoke away from the facility, whatever they're smoking. We have, you know, a few neighbors who maybe are not really pleased with us being there. They have the impression that it is affecting their commerce, which... just from an observational perspective, it's very difficult to see how it possibly could affect their commerce. But, people get a little bit maybe paranoid and overreact. We do have the police come periodically because we get complaints, but none of the complaints are based on anything legal in the street type of thing.
What if the cops come around looking for, what if I'm, you know, I got one of those sitting tickets, because, you know, it's illegal for me to sit down on, you know, Alvarado Street. I mean, what if they try, cop says, this guy's wanted for a ticket, I'm going to get him. Are you going to protect me, or are you just going to let him take me away?
Well, we wouldn't, we wouldn't disclose anybody who's there or not there. We just wouldn't. That wouldn't be part of, if a cop is going to come, you know, barging into the building, you know, I don't know what we would do, but that's never happened. And if they say, you know, so-and-so here, we would just say we can't confirm or deny they're seeking services here. That's not really our role.
How long you guys been around?
Which program? Are you talking about the whole organization or just...
The homeless runaway guys.
Oh,
things.
I'd say at least 10 years, maybe a little bit longer. It's been around. It's evolved, moved from building to building, and we're pretty well set where we're at. We own the building that we operate out of, which is great. It keeps our overhead low. and I don't see us really going anywhere or changing our services anytime soon.
And so I gotta, you know, I want to find some place to sleep. You say, if I come in at night, I got a sleeping bag in and let me crash on the floor.
No, we get some youth who will sleep like on the benches outside where we take the seats out of the van, but we lock it up at night. We do have a 6-bed facility for youth 18 to 21, both male and female, that's 3 doors down. And so if there's a vacancy there, you could, you know, possibly seek services, but we don't let people come in.
Now, what is this place? What's this place that's 3 doors down? What's that?
It's called Safe Passage, and it's a transitional housing for individuals who are 18 to 21 who are transitioning from, you know, being a minor to an adult, who are homeless or unsheltered.
That sounds like I've got to tell social workers lots of stuff about myself before they're going to let me sleep there. Is that right?
No, what they said. You know, what happens is they tell the social workers a lot about themselves after they move in. Everybody gets to know each other, and there's a full-time program manager there, along with support staff at night.
Well, that means I can just walk in if I want, if I'm 18, and say, hey, I need a bed for the night. And they're going to give me a bed. I think there'd be a line of people in front of that place.
But the problem is it's a 6-bed facility, and we need about a 50-bed facility. So we're just under-resourced. I mean, we just don't have the money.
I'm sorry, how many beds you got?
We have 6 beds. We could really use about 50 beds for the number of youth we serve, probably, you know, every day. And then, but, you know, we also can hand out hotel vouchers. As well. So
how many hotel vouchers you guys got available, I'd say, on a week basis?
We've never run out that I'm aware of. And we give them out pretty liberally, especially when the weather is a problem. We don't really ever deny anybody hotel vouchers. It's not meant to be a permanent fix, so we have to be a little bit cautious in terms of how we distribute them, but on the other side of the continuum, they can get these vouchers if they're in need. Which in need is not necessarily an exact science. There's some subjectivity determining who's in need and who's not in.
So what if I need an abortion? Are you going to help me there?
Yes, we would.
And how are you going to help me?
Depending on what you need, transportation, we might be able to help financially. I have not been confronted with the situation in that program yet, but we do have funds, you know, available for a whole number of needs, and we also have undesignated funding that we can use for whatever we want.
And you've been doing this for how long?
How long have I been with this organization?
Yeah.
Almost 3 years, 2.5 years.
You've been
almost
with...
Almost 3 years.
You've been doing this program for 2 years?
No, I've been doing this program since March, with 9 months.
I'm going to shift from my role as the inquiring young guy or gal.
Okay.
Although my deep-voiced for a gal, I must say. But... How do you worked with people here in Santa Cruz for about 9 months when you were head of the Homeless Lack of Services Center, encountering a lot of homeless people. How would you contrast what you're finding in Monterey and the services you have there with the services that were available in Santa Cruz?
As far as the volume of services?
Nature of the services, availability of services, how well they meet the needs of the people, generally, that sort of thing.
Well, I think there's less need in Monterey County than there is in Santa Cruz County, because I think there's a significantly larger homeless population in Santa Cruz. So there's less services, but there's less need. There's a lot of services in Santa Cruz, but it's pretty woefully inadequate compared to the need. I just don't. When people say, "Well, I got a ticket for sleeping outside," well, why didn't you go to a homeless shelter? That is absurd. That is completely illogical and nonsensical, because there's rarely a bed open in Santa Cruz. Contrasting that to Monterey County, Monterey County seems to be, first of all, Monterey County doesn't seem to have that sense of urgency that Santa Cruz County has in relation to, for lack of a better term, eradicating the homeless. There seems to be more of a mentality that we see this as being potentially a problem. What should we do about it? And then I know they passed the sitting ban on Alvarado, but that's a very small section of a rather large area. In Chinatown, Salinas, where there's like large homeless encampments, they generally roust the individuals there about every 3 months, but it's more of a, I'm sure the people who live there don't enjoy it, but there certainly seems to be more of a amicable relationship. So they roust them, they clean it all out, and then they move back in. It's almost like spring cleaning every 3 months. And then they, you know, they generally don't hassle people in the interim. So there's more of a mutually coexisting relationship between persons in need of social services and who are, low or no income, and the government and the police force. At least that's, there's just significantly less pressure. I'm not the chief executive officer, but I'm the senior program officer, so I would get a little bit of the political blowback, and I just don't get in it a whole lot. I don't feel like I have to answer a lot of questions. I don't feel like I have to justify what I'm doing, and that wasn't the case in Santa Cruz. There seemed to be always some tension going on between the CHIP and the Downtown Business Association, and what are you going to do about A, B, C, and D, and we're going to put these friendly parking meter things in that you put money in that provide services. I mean, there was always some rub there that was anxiety producing, basically.
So you were you've been working in Salinas for a longer period of time than Monterey, right?
Correct.
And you were, I guess, working as part of a drug program there?
Yeah, I was. I'm still overseeing the methadone clinic.
Methadone clinic.
Correct.
I guess there's no prospect of an injection center in Salinas or Monterey?
Give it time.
Explain to us what an injection center is.
Well, it'd be a place where people can access clean needles, access clean water, a sterile environment, a place where people will be significantly less likely to develop abscesses and other sepsis-related medical problems.
You're talking about a place where people can shoot up, right?
Yeah, and we're talking about, a police-free zone, a place where people can come and not be fearful. And then also, a big deal now is, hypodermics, on the beach and stuff, and so they can dispose of their used hypodermic needles in a sharps box is what it's called. So there's nothing like that now. I don't know, really, I haven't tested the political climate enough to know if that's feasible, but I think it's a good idea. You're going to have a lot less emergency room visits. Economically, it's a winner. It doesn't encourage people to use drugs because nobody wants to be a heroin addict. What it does is it cuts down on a lot of medical costs because there's a lot less medical issues when you have a sterile environment.
Now, in Santa Cruz, we have a a group that has still got lots of publicity backing from newspapers like the Sentinel, called, I guess it's, what's it called? It's not the Clean Team and it's not Take Back Santa Cruz, but it is a group that has been publicizing its collection of hypodermic needles and needle sticks and things of that sort. There was a big story a couple of days ago in the Santa Cruz Sentinel about that. I don't know, 6,000 needles found in 3 years, something to that effect, improperly discarded needles. Is there a similar, what I call it, needle mania or needle hysteria? Or what's the extent of that in Salinas and Monterey?
You hear a few complaints every once in a while, but it's nothing near, it's almost non-existent.
Organizations, and you must have, because you wouldn't have this anti-homeless law that involves sitting on Alvarado Street, which passed, in spite of its being defeated a year before. Did you testify against it? I know there were social service providers aplenty who testified against it a year ago when I went to the Monterey City Council then.
No, I didn't.
And was that a conscious decision? And if so, why?
It wasn't a conscious. I probably would have went, but I was really unaware of what was going on. I was probably not as aware as I should have been about exactly what was going on. And it wasn't, you know, it wasn't really highly publicized, probably a failure on my part considering what I do for a living, but, you know, it was probably an oversight more than a conscious decision not to testify or not testify. And the organization that I work for now is much less concerned about their image politically than the organization I work for in Santa Cruz.
The Homeless Lack of Services Center you're talking about.
Correct. Yeah, there was a lot of internal pressure to, you know, make the people across Coral Street happy, to attend, you know, the Downtown Business Association meetings and try to, you know, be the face of we're working with you, but we all care about these people, that sort of thing. So I feel like I have more latitude. So if I wanted to attend something like that and make a statement, you know, I'd just let my boss know, and I don't think that there would be any issue with that.
What about making a statement around the need for injection and inhalation centers like I've heard, and I haven't researched it recently, are being done not just in Europe, but also in Canada and British Columbia. I haven't
right.
heard any place in the United States where they're doing it yet, although, you know, I'm not unsure where it would be happening. But it requires people to speak out and stand up and start making public statements that might not be too popular with their bosses and certainly not with police departments, district attorneys, pharmaceutical firms, drug counseling people. Maybe it would be with some drug counseling people. I don't know. I mean, I would always. You see yourself at all in that possible role?
You know no. For a couple of reasons. One is that I don't really consider myself an activist. I'm more of an administrator. I would advocate for the people that I serve, but my primary responsibility is to provide service delivery. But there's a second piece too, in that. In encouraging people to, I would have to really think through the whole methadone clinic and a safe injection site, because they are a bit at odds. Both actually are harm reduction models, which I'm in full agreement with. But I've seen the damage that injecting heroin can do versus the benefits of methadone are remarkable. And I would really encourage anybody who suffers from an opiate addiction to at least try methadone. Now, for the people that choose not to, I think it's appropriate for that group, and I would have no issue with that, or even advocating for that, because there is going to be a group that is going to be resistant to treatment. The flip side is that I've seen the benefits of methadone, and I've seen the difficulties with heroin and just a general opiate addiction, and methadone really gives people an opportunity for a much higher quality of life. And, you know, I'm cynical. You know, I don't say those things just because I want to promote some program that doesn't work. You know, if it didn't work, you know, that's that, but it really does work, and it's really helped a lot of people have meaningful, you know, more meaningful lives, more meaningful relationships, a higher quality of life, less health-related issues. So there would be some, I would have to really think through that, and I haven't thought through that.
What about methamphetamines? Here in Santa Cruz, it's the demon word. Is it a major problem, more so or less so than heroin in Monterey County as far as, I don't know. I mean, you know, I'm reluctant to bring it up because as far as I can see, alcohol and tobacco do far more damage than any of these, all these drugs put together. And there's no real, you know, attempt to rein in the tobacco manufacturers. I mean, it's a lot of no smoking zones being created. But you know, and you know, but there are booze stores on every, you know, every three blocks. So I don't know. I mean, I'm wary of adopting the language of the paranoid interest groups. I don't know what I'm going to call them. The people who are the drug warrior types.
Sure.
I mean, you know, yeah, methadone, clinics, heroin, isn't, I mean, how much of a problem, is it the criminalization of heroin that's mainly the problem? Is it lack of education? I mean, and how does that compare with the problem with other addictions? Again, you know, we tend to think of these problems in terms of, you know, methamphetamines and heroin because they're illegal drugs or cocaine, whereas other, you know, pharmaceuticals are far more damaging and far more prevalent than any of these drugs. But are you dealing with pharmaceutical withdrawals at all? I mean, you know, what's happening with that?
Yeah, we deal with pharmaceutical withdrawals, and that and pharmaceutical opiates are just as problematic as street heroin. There's almost no distinction between the two.
What percentage of your clients are involved with pharmaceuticals, and what with street heroin or street methamphetamine?
The older patients tend to mostly be the old school heroin addicts. The younger patients tend to be the ones who come in on OxyContin, Vicodin, fentanyl patches, you know, those types of opiates. And so I would almost say it's probably about a 50-50 split. We get all sorts of people come in who have the same story. I got in an automobile accident. My doctor prescribed me OxyContin. I got hooked. I couldn't stop. I started buying them off the streets. It got expensive. I switched to heroin because it was cheaper. I smoked it at first, and then I needed a stronger fix, so I started injecting. That's a really common pathway.
And that's a larger group of people than the methamphetamine folks.
Yeah, we're harm reduction, so we test people for substances, but we don't kick them out of the clinic. We just modify their dose of care methadone if necessary. I don't know the number of methamphetamine users because not all of them come in, obviously. They're not necessarily needing methadone. Methadone doesn't do anything for methamphetamine, only for opiate. So I can't really answer that. I do know that in housing projects, in low income or affordable housing situations, and housing first projects where there's not a requirement for sobriety, I do know that the number one reason why people get kicked out of those places is because of alcohol. Not because of methamphetamine, not because of heroin, not because of weed, not because of whatever. It's alcohol that creates the most problems in terms of residential situations.
We're talking with Doug Loisel, who is working with the Homeless Runaway Youth Program, as well as a methadone program that is called...
The Off-Main Clinic.
One more time?
Off-Main Clinic.
OFF Main Clinic?
Yes.
Okay. Let's see here. If anybody has any questions of Doug, you can call in 469-3119, area code 831, 469-3119. Many vets coming to use your services?
Yeah, because the Veterans Administration, there was issues in the past, and I'm going to not speak to the present situation because I don't know. I just know I've worked with veterans for a lot of years, and there was a significant amount of overprescription that has happened in the past, and so a lot of veterans come in, they're struggling with opiate addiction. In addition to that, we get some of the Vietnam veterans who came back and either started or continued using heroin. So yeah, we do have a number of veterans seeking services, and the Veterans Administration contracts with us, so we're able to provide this service to veterans for free.
How about pharmaceutical, that's the next question I should ask you about the poverty situation here, but before I do, though, what about pharmaceutical psychiatric medications? You get much in the terms of people wanting to withdraw from or deal with the deleterious effects of those medications.
No. Well, you know, I mean, you know, the antidepressant medications aren't addicting necessarily physically. You do get people coming in trying to get off of anti-anxiety medications like benzodiazepines, Valium.
What about lithium? Things like lithium or other medications that, you know, you may not crave them, but if you come off them quickly, you're likely to relapse in terms of psychotic episodes.
Right. Well, lithium is... Yeah, I mean... kind of a complicated question or a complicated situation.
Well, wait, let me give you a chance to think about it because I'm running low on time here. I'm going to have to shovel you off to the side shortly.
Okay.
But the final question I have is this available for poor people? And if so, what are the limits, what are the strictures, and so forth? Both the drug situation and the youth, the runaway youth center, the methadone and the youth center.
Youth center, there's no cost to the youth center. The methadone clinic, if you have California Connect, which is Medi-Cal or, you know, Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, if you have that, we can provide the services for you for free. If you don't have that, we would provide services for you for $350 a month. And if you're a veteran, you would receive services for free as well. So,
what percentage of your people are court mandated?
A small percent. Because AB 109 really isn't working well. I don't know what you've heard about it, but it's just not working well. It's hard to take a person out of an incarcerated situation, stick them with 15 different requirements, tell them to show up here, 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 and here. Oh, no, by the way, you got to see the probation officer. Oh, by the way, using substances, because if you test positive, you're going right back in. So it's one of those programs like Top 36 in this country, perfect.
You're fading out, Doug. Let's talk again.
Okay. Yeah, we'll talk soon.
Hey, I appreciate it. Talking with Doug Loisel in Monterey, who is formerly struggling to reform things here in Santa Cruz and said he got bumped and now is working over in Monterey and Salinas, both with the Homeless Runaway Program and with, he told me a moment ago, tell me again.
off-lead clinic, methadone.
Yes.
Community and purpose.
Thank you for calling in. I'm sorry that your signal is fading, but our time is fading too. So.
Thanks, Robert. You take care of yourself.
You too, and thank you for taking the time, man.
You bet.
Bye-bye. And phone lines are now completely open, 427-3772, if you want to call in. I'm going to try to play some more of this Lane street rap for the performance pens that went into effect apparently a week ago now. And hopefully I'll have more for you on this next show. If I get down there and or get more information, I'll be able to pass it on to you. If you have more information, do pass it on to me, 423-4833. I don't know if Uncle Dennis is coming in tonight. I suspect he's probably not, this being Christmas Day, in which case we're going to be able to hear one of his old shows again. Or maybe he's got a new show he's cooked up and has put on the computer and I can download it. We'll see. In the meantime, here's a little more. Again, we're listening to Mayor, then Vice Mayor Don Lane, 3 days before the first reading of the performance pens for all the performers, vendors, and other folks. We won't allow you to use the sidewalks freely. You have to be in these specified areas on 2% of the sidewalks. And as far as I know, 0% of the sidewalks in any other places in town. Although, again, I'm probably wrong, but I haven't heard anything one way or the other on that, so we'll see. Here's some more from that brief bit of outreach, which was prompted by pushes from Huff and others like myself to say, what the hell? But again, it was too late to make any meaningful changes or have any really meaningful input into these performance pens. They're not interested in what homeless people think in terms of laws that impact homeless or what performers think in terms of laws that impact them. They're only concerned with what their buddies and sponsors and the financial interests downtown and the conservative residential groups, the police department, and their own staff are telling them. I'm afraid that that is pretty much how I see the situation.
It ends up keeping us from being able to even move to the right place because they're unaware and because there's so much traffic out of here from people that are from out of town. That's actually a lot of who comes and does this type of thing, where there's only a half a dozen regular locals, maybe a dozen actually, you know.
Argument for less regulation.
Well, it's just you can't expect people to come. This is the most uniquely regulated place on the West Coast that I've seen of the six major cities that I've done this in.
And what the main speaker there is the artist, free artist who sells his artwork or gives it for donation. I'm not sure what he's doing, whether he's putting price tags on it now or not. And he fundamentally is telling the vice mayor that it's his right, his free speech right, to have his stand, provided it's not blocking traffic or blocking the sidewalk, to have it wherever he wants it for as long as it needs to be, you know, and within reason. I don't know. I mean, that's what I'm getting out of what he's saying. Lane, of course, he's impervious to those kinds of arguments because he represents the face of the staff and the city council, which has, you know, come up with its own prefabricated repressive solutions, or not really solutions. There's no problem to solve. Repressions, and they are standing by him.
I mean, I am kind of experienced, and I've seen
those who are down here.
They have really gone to every length to divvy up and partition and enforce.
Like, the occupation of Palestine.
I wouldn't make that. I don't know about that. But I'm just saying that it's to expect people that are not native here to come in and flow into that routine. But this is what it's not realistic.
And then you've been here. You've been here a while.
Yeah. So you know
that the rules already do know them.
And this is Don Lane, I believe, debating with someone else now.
And then what?
You can do this in certain places that are certain distances.
My fear is the opposite. My fear is
I know. I don't think Alfred is right there, but you know what I mean.
Really cuts back on public space for all of us. So
that
that person you just described, these little pens that people are in, instead of free reign.
I got to be a mayor. I can't.
By the way, why don't you say what your name
is? Counters that don't know the rules, so they're going to get in fights with people like us who do know the rules. rules are like...
Well, the hosts will come up and help all of you out.
It's going to be a mess.
So we're talking with... This is for Free Radio. What's your name?
My name is Alexandria.
I'm sure you probably told me before. I apologize.
It's okay, Robert.
We have a crime in progress. What did you see, Pat?
Solid matter being expelled from someone's mouth.
And that person was?
Was it First Alarm or police?
Caller First Alarm guy and a starter First Alarm guy.
The First Alarm, and we saw lots of tickets given to transients and homeless people by Barnett for spitting. So they got fined for it while these two...
Do we know the names of any of these people you saw spitting?
How much is the fine for spitting, Robert?
He wouldn't give his name.
How much is the fine?
Did he have a? Did
he said they were going on a call.
Did he have a sign that said his name, a name tag?
John didn't.
They immediately turned away from me and walked away. And then when I asked them to identify themselves, we're responding to a call, and they ran away.
I see. Thank you, John.
And any local government has the ability to regulate all this activity.
Not completely.
He's not talking about spitting activity. He's talking about playing a guitar, sitting at a table with artwork, or. Your petition, he's talking about having a sign that says, you know, need money to travel on, whatever. That's what this is now the mayor, previously the vice mayor, talking.
Yeah, like a totalitarian regime.
Let him finish.
Okay. You're right.
Well,
there's correct.
Limit to specifically divvying up the public area in a way that they say this is what this public area is for, specifically. Like, why are you getting to say that and the public's not getting to say that? Are we
that's
voting on
point.
This? Is this
yeah, do we get
it seems
vote?
Like these ordinances are being made by a small collection of individuals,
yeah.
And
well,
they're being said, this is
the
total public space.
We have.
I know it is, and that's why we have a problem, even though the government also says that the people are the ones running the country. And so that's where you run into an issue when decisions are being made not by the people, you know, who are out here using this space. I'm glad that you're out talking to us, and that's nice. I hope you take in what we're saying, you know, because if we get pushed far, it's just going to end up in a higher court, and this is going to go on, and they're going to go, oh, yes, well, they can, in fact, do this, you know, so, because this is our livelihood, and this is how we stay from being homeless and dirty and like the people they're really concerned about, you know, this is how I make my living, so it's very close to my heart, and I don't have anything keeping me away from taking it to the next level if I feel like I'm being, you know, like pushed down upon, because I will,
and I
feel very strongly about that, you know what I mean?
Let's not go very much farther without it.
Not stop, let's go much further.
No, Robert, don't.
The reason that I don't know if you kind of know the trajectory of the last year in this discussion is that it was my experience that people who were doing freedom of speech activity were being constrained too much. And I said, I think that this is too limiting. And we actually, this whole new proposal is to create more room and more flexibility for that to happen.
But there's still an hour time limit on each space.
There is at the moment.
There's still
yeah.
a designation that once you've been in a space, you can't return to a space within 100 feet of that space for a 24-hour period.
Yes.
See, so that one is so restrictive that it's mind-boggling. And that makes it almost impossible to do this for anyone.
They spent 6 months ignoring that particular issue.
That one is one of the most ridiculous ones of all. And that makes it basically impossible for anyone to do this with any regularity. And that totally restricts our freedom of expression to do that.
And I think, and just so you know, I totally get that. And I also just want to say, you know, that the whole...
He totally gets it, but he said nothing about it throughout his, well, he said nothing about it since when it was passed in 2003. He said nothing about it when he got it on the council some years later. He said nothing about it when he was mayor 3 or 4 years ago. And he's vice mayor and mayor again. He said nothing about it then. I'm talking about the move-along law. So he's your standard politician, essentially lying to the community. He gets that. What he means to say is, he can nod and make like he hears what you're saying and he understands it, but he is going to take actually zero action on it. Hope Don proves me wrong, but that's been my understanding of what's going on with Don Lane on this issue.
Impetus for me trying to fix the problem that I noticed before was around performers, and it wasn't really trying to get at the
performers
vending.
Have the same problem.
Well, we all have to fall under the same rules, apparently, and that's also where there's an issue.
But see, a minute ago you said you didn't want me to make a distinction between performers
and
vendors.
We have been, which is the problem. No, I want you to make a distinction. We're absolutely
right.
Different.
Okay.
No,
so
I'm
that's
yeah.
what I'm saying. So we're trying to create some spaces where it may, like where this guy, good singer, but if he's singing right into that door, probably not the best set of arrangement.
The business owns that part of that space, and they don't have to own this part out here. This is the publicly owned space. So that's what they get for moving downtown. It's an area of noise.
I've grown up here. Street performers have been down here playing up and down the street wherever they want.
If his noise is not excessive, so there's not an issue. And if it is excessive and they want to make a complaint and it's a continual problem and officers have to keep coming out, then maybe we can address it further. But since that's not happening...
But let's not try to make a law or a rule
Of course, they made laws decades ago and have been enforcing them. And the problem is that people have not been making these reasonable arguments together in force and in groups to demand and secure changes in this. And that's what we still need to do.
But
breaking preemptive problems where there aren't any. You know.
But it's downtown.
I just want you to, that's really good. I get totally what you're saying. I just really want you to understand why I disagree with that, which is that if I worked in that store every day, and there's a place for a singer to sing right into that door, and that's what they're doing 10 hours a day, 6 days a week.
But it never happens.
And then it's complete bullshit. As a mediator between the merchants and the musicians and everyone else who uses downtown.
Name an example of that. Name one example where in your experience in 20 years, and you've lived here for a long time, Don, there was a street performer's guideline. When did that ever happen when these rules were not in place, which they weren't before 2002? Do you remember that ever happening?
Remember what which thing happened?
You always make your questions with so many digressions.
In other words, singing into a storefront for